Hi, folks. I'm Tom Ivester, an alcoholic. It's great to see you, man. Somebody opened the gates out there. Where's my microphone, man? How we doing? Great. Okay. Good show. Told me you had trouble seeing Dottie hid behind a mic. I know that's reassuring. Wish I could hide behind a mic. Great to be here. Every time I hear that talk by Dr. Bob, it's just is a special kind of experience. Because naturally I just relate to that in a special kind of way. When I think about the chain reaction of love and service that was born when Bill stuck out the hand to Dr. Bob, and then in turn to Bill D, and then to another one, and about 125,000 later, they stuck it out to me. What a great feeling that is to realize that I'm part of that movement that now does, in fact, literally reach totally around this globe. And so it's always a special kind of feeling, and I'm delighted to be here. I have a few memories of Oregon. I was here in May down at Grants Pass and had a great time, and it's good to be back. And the most recent memory I had beyond that was I remember a couple of very foggy, drunk days when I became a Umatilla Indian up on the Columbia River. Got introduced to salmon and much more. So it's really great to be back, and I am delighted to be here. I appreciate very much the work that's obviously gone into this conference. You guys have done good. Good to be back in just a beautiful piece of God's world with a beautiful bunch of God's children, and so have the opportunity to just share a bit of what this miracle is about in my life, and that's basically what I want to do. I used to just absolutely couldn't imagine trying to speak more than 10 minutes, and now it's a matter of trying to figure out what can you get to in the hour and 45 minutes that we'll that I'll be spending here alone. I appreciate the theme. Yeah, and I don't know if you think about themes a lot, but you know, you always get a theme, and that's sort of your goal. That's what you want to achieve. And then you start looking for speakers who can help you achieve that goal. Kind of a left-handed compliment when you get picked for a keep it simple. I don't know if my fellow speakers have thought about obviously, we're not going to invent any rockets here tonight, I don't think. Now, I guess in a way it is a real, real solid kind of compliment, and I do appreciate that theme very much. And I want to talk about that a great deal tonight, because I think it is fundamental to some of the things that we are confronted with in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I certainly want to do that. So I better get started. Best I can tell, and from what I've read, we come in two types, two basic types. One is the guy who sort of has to drink his way into alcoholism, or her way into alcoholism. Takes a long time for that kind of alcoholic. Slow learners, I guess. They just have to drink forever, and then one day they just go off the end of the pier and don't come back. They just work their way into it. Then there's another kind who is a little quicker study than the deliberate type. It just seemed like the first time they ever take a drink, chaos is born. And it just looks like instant disaster right from the very beginning. Now, I was the latter type. The first time I ever took a drink in my life, some important, very spectacular things happened. Man, that stuff hit home. And I loved everything about it. The first drink I ever took, I learned it quicker than anything I've ever learned in my life. It was as natural as breathing, and I loved it dearly. I loved what it did for me. And what happened to me was no real mystery. It's no complicated thing. I was basically just an awkward, goofy-looking kid in the painful teenage years And I found something that would magically change all that so that I could become comfortable and poised and at ease and filled with daring. And man, I loved it. And I just fell in love with the stuff. I thought for a fleeting little while that I might have been born alcoholic because I drank so goofily right from the beginning. I personally don't think there's any such thing. I just think I was a troubled kid who found a tremendous solution in booze, and I would have been stupid not to have drunk more. That stuff was the greatest remedy that I ever found in my life for anything I ever had. And it just made me feel marvelous. It rounded out all the corners and smoothed the rough places and gave me that magical feeling. And I loved it. I loved the way it made me feel. I loved that warm, absolute tingling thing that went from the top of my head to the tip of my toes. I loved the people who drank. It just looked to me like people who drank were a little more exciting than people who didn't drink. I felt for a good while kind of sorry for folk who didn't drink. Looked to me like they were in pain. Acted like it. And I liked the drinking bunch. I guess that's why I like Alcoholics Anonymous. That's who we are. We just ain't doing it. Most of us ain't doing it now. But I loved that bunch. They always seemed to have a little devilish glint in their eyes when they were open. There was an air of excitement. You never know what drunks are going to do. They don't know what they're going to do. And there's an air of anticipation that something's going to happen. If not now, the next place for sure. Living in that expectation. And I loved it. I loved that atmosphere. I loved the arena where it occurred. Everywhere from the comfortable padded lounges to those old rock'em sock'em places down in North Carolina. God, I loved that stuff. I loved the scuffling, the shucking and jiving, the lying, the conniving, the weekend romancing, the music, the noise, the smoke. Loved it all. So there was no mystery about what happened. I just fell in love with that stuff. And man, it was better than anything I'd ever known in my life. And I just got caught up in it. And I was basically a guy that just sort of got carried away with the euphoria of release. And when I started to drink, I never looked back. Never looked back. I don't remember a single time in my entire life that I clearly, knowingly dealt with alcohol might be a problem. I don't recall ever doing that. Now, I recall times when it had become a bit inconvenient. When I would wake up in somebody's jail and didn't even know what town, I would wonder if it was working real good. And I would think things like, I ain't drinking that no more. Won't go to that place anymore. That's a raunchy crowd. I ain't going there. There are times when I'd wake up on one of those chilly Monday mornings draped around that porcelain throne throwing up stuff never been seen by man. Dry heat, couldn't hold water, eyes run out on the stem, sweating, bullets freezing one minute, thinking I was going to die and then scared I wouldn't. God, I would have the feeling that it wasn't going great. Trying to take a drink. And I'm telling you, man, people talk about alcoholics being a little lean on courage. Watch an alcoholic trying to take a drink in that condition. Hold your breath and get that sucker down. And feel it jumping around like a Mexican jumping bean. And you're saying, God, let it stay down. And then sometimes you come back through your nose and it smarts. Ooh. And then the miracle happened, one would stay down. And I'd say things like, I ain't doing that no more, and meant it. And wouldn't till about 5 o'clock. And then at 5 o'clock something happened, it turned the neon off. And it looked like every time that thing blinked, it said, hey Tom, come on back, boy. We got something going on, and you go get in on it. Here I go. Now that's what happened to me. That's my alcoholism in the born anyway. Because that's how it got started with me. And I just sort of took off. And I didn't go through any particular lines of demarcation. You listen to a lot of us and it sounds like we went from something like riches to rags to riches. And that wasn't mine. I just sort of went from rags to rags to rags. Man, I was a drunk before I was ever anything else. And my drinking never went through any radical changes. I got as drunk as I could get the first time I ever drank and the last time I ever drank. Got that way every time I drank or wanted to. Wasn't always able to work it out. But I don't remember a single time in my life ever once taking a drink and having a sense of satisfaction. I see people do that, and I absolutely marvel at it to this day. Offer them a drink, and they very suavely put their hand over the glass and say, "Oh, no, thanks. God knows." I just want to shake them. I think, "What the hell is wrong with you, boy?" Why anybody would not drink that can baffles me. So I've never had that feeling. Never turned one down. I don't remember ever in my life turning down a drink. Somebody offered me one. If I did, I'll guarantee you I misunderstood the question. I've been so drunk I couldn't lay on the floor. And the stuff coming out my nose, and I'm not till I throw it up, I'm probably just running over. And so, somebody say, "Don't you think you've had enough?" And you know what I'd say, "Just one more." Yeah. No mystery to it. It was just like a runaway train. I just sort of hit the ground running. And that's what happened. It was just a crescendo of mess. And somewhere in the process, I developed alcoholism. Now, there is a difference. It was kind of hard to tell, and I didn't notice it till I got sober and started looking back. And folks kept telling me I was an alcoholic. I never could distinguish any of that. Folks told me that when I was drinking, but didn't mean a thing. But somewhere in the rush of that kind of life, I developed alcoholism. Now, I'm not going to dwell on this. I'm going to talk about it in a minute. But, you know, I think there's a tremendous difference between a drunk and an alcoholic. And you know, that it's not measured by how much we drink, how much trouble we get into, or any of that. It has to do with a powerful but very subtle, very important change that occurs. And it happened to me somewhere in the midst of all that bedlam. I crossed the line from alcoholism to uncontrolled drinking, from problem drinking to uncontrolled drinking or alcoholism. Had no earthly idea. Didn't drink any different, didn't get any drunker the day after than the day before. When you get so drunk you can't wiggle, that's all there is. I mean, it don't make any difference whether you're a social drinker or an alcoholic. And so that's what I was, and it just sort of went on. I never really understood what had happened to me. I had some vague impressions that I didn't think through, that started to clarify after I got sober. You know, it's a strange kind of thing, but when I crossed that line from control, or from that episodic kind of drinking I was doing to alcoholism, it was almost as if it were in a day. Things started to change where I had up to that point been sort of perversely proud of how much I drank. Took a great deal of pleasure. In fact, I was usually the last guy on my feet, the one who drove the others home, always the one that was the life of the party and the leader of the bad crowd. That started to change. And all at once, rather than being proud of how much I drank, I became very conscious of the fact that I didn't drink like other people. Began to lie the other way. Instead of exaggerating how much I drank, started to minimize. Started to seek out people who drank like me, found fewer and fewer. I started to drink alone. I would submit to you that social drinking, by definition, demands the presence of other people. If there ain't no people around, it ain't social. And so I started doing that, and then it just went on from there. Let me just sort of tell you how it went with me in just the two ends of the extreme. All I have to do to understand the impact of alcoholism in my life, the reality of alcoholism in my life, is to take a look at the two parts of it I remember clearly. And that's the beginning and the end. I remember that bright young fellow bounced out of high school, Belmont, North Carolina, set out to conquer the world. 16 years old, full of optimism, hope, and all kinds of things. And then compare him to the fellow who 8 short years later was living on the street up in the city of Flint, Michigan. Not overly proud of that, but that's where I was living. Went up there chasing the bucks and wound up making more money than I had sense enough to handle, and wound up letting my reputation get in front of me in a city of 500,000, wound up unemployed and darn near unemployable. Last year that I drank, I lived basically on the streets. I'd come up for air once in a while, but basically just lived on the streets. Used to say that I lived by my wits, but that's not exactly true. During that period of my life, I lived basically by my lack of character. I know of little that a man can do that I didn't do. Very little. I'm not proud of that. You can hear him believe it. But I hope and pray to my God that I never become so arrogant in my sobriety that I forget where I came from, or that I'm unwilling to share, because what I know without any question is that the greatest value that I have to offer to another alcoholic is the truth about my own experience. And so I never want to forget where I went. I never want to forget for one second what my alcoholism was for me. It was not just some cute little party that got out of hand. It was a killer disease. It was not nuisance behavior or problem-ridden behavior. It was a killer disease that would have done me in short order if I hadn't been brought to a stop. So I have no illusions about where it carried me. I never want to forget for one minute those final days of my alcoholism when I hustled around on the streets, demeaned myself, cribbing drinks from strangers, stealing from people, hurting folks, rolling other drunks, all the stuff of survival on the street. Never want to forget for one minute what that degrading, demeaning experience was about. Never want to forget the experience of selling my life's blood $5 a throw. That's what my kind lined up and did. That's what I did. Never want to forget that. Never want to forget about singing for my supper in a mission on and on. Just the things that degrade the existence of an alcoholic. And I never want to forget that. Yeah, I'm the kind of guy that I fully believed as wide open as I was running. It was just a matter of time till the string would run out. I knew that I was going to come to no good end. Really never did have any real illusions about that. Thought I was going to have a fairly short but brilliant life. And sure it would have been that way, except that I started to get brought to a stop. Yeah, I wish I could tell you, like many recovered alcoholics can, that one day I just had enough, threw in the towel, called for help, found it, and been sober ever since. That's just not the way it happened. I was one of those who stayed there too long and wound up doing the kind of thing that I know every alcoholic in the world fears doing. Thank God most don't. Never known an alcoholic who hadn't had chronic fears that they would do something in a blackout that couldn't be undone, hurting other people. And for most people, that's a bad dream. But for some, it's a very real nightmare. And I was one of those. I woke up in jail in Flint, Michigan. No novelty that I'd been there more times than you could count. Figured I was in there for the same as always, drunk, hustling, fighting, or whatever. And was greeted with the fact that the night before, driving somebody's car down the main street of the city, had run over and killed two people. And my reaction was much like anybody's would be, just absolute shock and disbelief. I could not believe it, couldn't deal with it. And my response was just to push it away and just not think, and then gradually accepted the truth. Stayed in jail for 76 days before my folks found out where I was and came and made arrangements for me to be released on bond, charged with manslaughter, and got out it will be the date that I got out of that jail. Absolutely convinced I would never drink again, stayed sober a day and a half, and then of course I drank. From July to November of 1956, I drank like nobody I've ever seen, literally nobody I've ever seen. And that's no macho statement. That's just a real fact. I was what they call a pathological drinker, drinking with pitiful logic. No question of what I was doing. I was trying to drink myself to death, and that was obvious to anybody, and just as obviously I didn't. And the 19th of November of 56, I hope and pray, was my last drink. Has been so far. I didn't know it was going to be. I knew it was going to be the last one for a while, because that day I was to be tried on the charge of manslaughter. And there was no real intrigue about what that was to be. I had no defense when I stood up in front of the judge. He asked me to plead. My plea was to stand mute, and I think that said it all. What could you say? I didn't even know what I'd done. They had to tell me what I'd done. And I was obviously found guilty and sentenced to max of 15 years in the Michigan State Penitentiary. I remember that day clearly. I remember the instant reaction of fear and yet the most real sense of relief I'd ever known. And the next day, I walked into that institution, absolutely resigned to my fate, never believed I would ever come out of that place alive, and truly did not care. 24-year-old piece of human wreckage, and all I wanted to do was be gone and just have nobody to be bothered with me again. That's literally the way I felt. A mighty sick young fellow. Sat in my cell for the first 30 days of there, didn't speak to anybody, got into no conversations. If somebody wanted to see me for something, they'd call me out, interview me. And one day a guy called me out, interviewed me, and his task was to look for folks with alcohol problems. He had no problem seeing that I was one of them. A lot of other people had told me that they looked like I had a lot of trouble with booze. But always it had gone into something like, why don't you quit drinking or don't drink so much? I'd never seen anybody who had indicated that there was anything an alcoholic could do. I'd never heard of people helping alcoholics. Now, this was 6 years after Dr. Bob died. And you know, AA was not a household word, but it was not totally unknown. It was totally unknown to me. I'd never heard of it. A little counselor talked with me about my alcoholism, recommended I get into the AA group there at the institution. Didn't really want to go. Didn't have to go, but I think I was just so beaten and docile that I went just because I didn't have any resistance left. I had no fight to muster. And walked into my first meeting, Groundhog Day of 1957. Absolutely no thought of what I would encounter in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a morbid-looking thing. I thought it would be a dark room with a lot of worn-out old men, too old to do anything but quit drinking. It just seemed gloomy to me, and I didn't want to go with that bunch of swingers, really. But I just wound up sitting there and sat down to my first meeting on Groundhog Day and listened to my first speaker. Guy later became my sponsor and loved him dearly. Name is Shy Walker from Kalamazoo, Michigan. Great guy. Truly, truly a giant in this program. And I'm so grateful to him. That first day I listened to him, I didn't identify with anything he said. But somehow or other, the spirit of that guy, I think, got through to me. And I never missed a meeting the whole time I was in that institution. And what started was a brand new way to live. I didn't believe I was an alcoholic. I was 24 years old, thought I was too young, knew I was too smart. I really thought deep down that I was a world beater that just never got off on the right foot. That's really what I believe. And if I ever got discovered sitting on the stool at a soda fountain, I would be an absolute hit. Well, here I sat. My life is over. I'm in a maximum custody penitentiary. I'll probably never see daylight again, and I'm exactly where I ought to be. And so I'm sitting in a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I listened to this guy tell his story. Even with all the history I had, I truly did not believe I was an alcoholic. But somehow or other, I just kept going back. And I want to just say this in kind of a rush and hurry, because you know, something tremendously important happened to me in that institution in the sense that I became a recovering alcoholic, a member of this program there, and truly had a life-changing experience. And you know, what causes that? You know, certainly it's not the environmental support of an institution like that. Jackson Prison is not Disneyland by any stretch of the imagination. I've seen most of the prisons in this country, at least half of them, except the new ones. And I would rate it the second or third worst penitentiary in the United States. There's 6,000 people there, to use the term loosely. There were some of the finest folks I ever saw in my life and some of the sorest excuses for human beings that ever lived. A liberal dose of both. And so it certainly wasn't the environment or the support or encouragement of anybody. What is it that takes a young fellow that's on a death spiral like mine and turns him around, gives him a brand new way to live? Now, what it takes is a powerful program. A powerful program that cuts through and gives hope where there's none. Even a will to live. I didn't even have that. A program that can cut through and give something sustaining and life-changing and meaningful in that kind of a situation, it takes power. And I'd like to share with you just as much as I can some of the thing that I think really and truly made a difference with me. Yeah, I think there are two basic things that make up Alcoholics Anonymous. One, and they are probably equally important in my mind. One is the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There is something enormously meaningful about feeling the union of the family of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I come in here and I'm with my buddies, you know, folks that I know from around the country, what a great feeling that is, because it's an extended family and it's my family. To walk into Oregon and feel totally at home, what a great feeling to be in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, my daughter came here for her, this is her birthday present. She wanted Oregon for a birthday present, so it's hers. She and I have been banging around here for a couple of days, and how great it feels to walk into the warmth of the fellowship, to walk into the first two huggers we saw. We were here pretty early, and they barely gotten warmed up, but they were still hugging like a tiger. And God, does it feel good to be home? The fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. The thing of belonging and feeling the union of being joined with my fellow alcoholics around this world. The fellowship of being in this program, so that I am part of it and it's part of me, and you and I share together something critically important. Yeah, I was introduced to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous by the people who walked into that penitentiary. People walked into my life that I had never seen or heard tell of and stuck out the right hand of fellowship to a guy that they didn't know. All they knew is that I was locked up inside a maximum custody penitentiary. They didn't know me from nothing. And yet, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was extended that fellowship, not in spite of my circumstances, hear me, not in spite of my circumstances, but because of them, because of them. That's the great power of this program, that it doesn't make any difference who you are or where you are. It's just a matter of one alcoholic helping another alcoholic. Powerful, powerful thing. The thing that gave me the realization that there was, honest to God, a way of life that I could be part of. That started to come through with me as guys would come into that institution and open up and share their lives. How tremendously important. One alcoholic telling his experience to another alcoholic is the most powerful healing balm this world has ever known for folks like you and me. And that's exactly what happens. People started to make me feel that sense of belonging. I'll tell you one very practical kind of thing about what it is that gives the anchors and the roots to being a part of this fellowship. After I got active in the group there in the institution, I got over my non-alcoholic stage and became a true believer and got involved in the program. I was secretary of the group, and a question came up in a meeting one time, where does that thing come from that we read before every meeting? And nobody knew, you know, the purpose of the meeting. Nobody knew. I mean, just was here when I got here. So as the secretary, it was my bound duty to find out. And somebody told me about New York, and I wrote to the General Service Office in New York. And I said, shoot, they're not going to write to some guy in a joint in Michigan. And I got the nicest letter. Nicest letter. Basically said, we don't know either, for sure. But said, we think it came from over here. There's a little piece of it in the book. Then explained. But what they wrote, a two-page letter to a guy in a maximum custody joint, explaining the intricacies of Alcoholics Anonymous. What a great feeling of being a part. The fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, just that sense of feeling union. And then as I started to get involved in it, I started to feel that incredible closeness with a few guys who shared my experience in that institution. Some of the finest meetings I've ever been to in my life, ever, were when 8 or 10 of us would pull up a tree in that yard and sit down and do some of the most powerful sharing I've ever known. The fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, the sharing program where we open up and share with each other. This fellowship, that's part of it. And that's certainly, that's a big part of the healing, starting to feel worth and hope. And then the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is the other thing. The fellowship is one thing. The fellowship is like a warm bath that won't last for long. You can't get by on just fellowship. Try to do that the first time you're alone, you're shot. So the fellowship's a marvelous thing, but it's only a piece of the thing. The other part's the program. And I was introduced to the program in an excellent kind of way in Jackson Prison. The group I belonged to, the recovery group, was an excellent group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I mean just that. An excellent group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Did a fine job of introducing new people to the program, did a fine job of introducing me to the fact that the program really is something you do. It's a design for living, as described in our book. And I was given that insight and understanding from other guys in the joint, just like me. The only difference was they'd gone through the experience. Then they turned around and shared it with the guys behind them, and I had the privilege to do the same later on. Tremendously important things that started to shape, started a brand new way of life. And the thing of getting actively involved in this process, I can't tell you how important that was. I found a brand new way to live in that institution. I got turned on to the business of living, started doing things to start bringing my life around, got enrolled in Michigan State University free of charge. I started doing college on television. Finished 2 years of college education on television from Michigan State University. I was up there last year, and they asked me why I was back. I said, I've got two alumni experiences to do. One was the Michigan State AA Convention, and the other one was the Michigan State Penitentiary Convention, and the AA Convention was held at Michigan State University, so I had a double alumnus experience, and how important that was to get turned on to the business of living, start designing some ways to live. Always be grateful for that. Gave me a good, solid, no-nonsense notion of how Alcoholics Anonymous works. And I'll tell you this. Some of you may do institutional work. I hope so. When you're working with some people say that institutional recovery is qualified recovery, you better believe it is highly qualified recovery. When a guy can practice this program on the yard of a penitentiary, that's the toughest living he'll ever know. I'll guarantee you he can make it on any street in the United States. A powerful, powerful tool. Powerful enough to get me through that experience. Better man for it because of what happened here. Let me talk a little bit about East Coast time. Let me talk a little bit about, now, what is it that when I think about the legacy that was handed me when this program was handed to me in that penitentiary? Now, what does that all mean in terms of what it was that was powerful enough to give me a brand new way to live? What is it that's important about that that I need to remember so that I can assure that the next person coming in behind me gets his good? Well, you know, I think there are some things. There are a lot of us in this country and probably in this room that are troubled and concerned about some of the drifts in Alcoholics Anonymous right now. I'm one who has some concerns about it, and I think the concerns are justified. They're worthy of our concern. And I'm not going to dwell on the problems, but I want to get you to think with me just a little bit. This ain't going to be a rah-rah part now. I want to just talk some nitty-gritty shop with you. God, this what an opportunity to talk to a whole bunch of alcoholics. And I'd like to get you to think about some issues in a way that at least is my perspective about some things. We do have a lot of problems. I'll tell you something that I have become convinced about. I think most of the problems that we're confronted with in Alcoholics Anonymous are self-inflicted. The problems that we're confronted with now, I don't think are embodied in the proliferation of treatment centers and the new things and profit motives and all that. Alcoholics Anonymous are self-inflicted. The problems that we're confronted with now, I don't think are embodied in the proliferation of treatment centers and the new things and profit motives and all that. There are some troubling issues with that, but I would submit to you that there's far more good news in that than bad. The majority of alcoholics who get in recovery today come out of treatment centers, thank God for them. An awful lot of drunks would not make it if it weren't for treatment centers. I'm deeply grateful for them. I know that they create some problems. Now, I don't think our problems are created by treatment centers. I think it's far more likely that the problem is how we react to them and how we deal with them. What do we do inside Alcoholics Anonymous to more effectively relate our 12th step work into the reality of what treatment centers do? I don't think it's in look-alike groups. Yeah, I know that there is just a multitude of things that look like Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think they pose 1 ounce of threat to us. I think what the greatest threat to us and what worries me most is what we take on in terms of an angry, hostile attitude. An angry, hostile attitude. Where we start losing the spiritual warmth that makes this program work. Did you hear Dr. Bob? Did you hear what he was saying? He said it's about love and it's about service. And it's about taking it back to the guys and gals that didn't get to come. He said it's about not talking about folks and cutting people up. It's about warmth and it's about love and it's about giving an alcoholic something that he can find nowhere else in this world. And when we lose that spiritual commitment to assuring that the next drunk gets as good as we've got, when we start to get angry and defensive and hostile toward folks that get caught up in the social machinery that exists today, I think we run great jeopardy. I think it does a great deal to us that's injurious and harmful. Now, let me share with you. When you hear people often when you hear folks talk about, I got thinking about this theme, and sometimes when you hear folks talk about let's keep it simple and let's get back to basics, it seems almost like code words for let's get them. You know, let's head off this new avalanche of stuff. That's what it really sounds like in many cases. What are we talking about? What are we talking about when we talk about keeping it simple? When we talk about getting to basics, what does that mean? Does it mean that we ought to conduct all of our meetings in monosyllable terms, that we should never use big words? Is that what that means? Does it mean that we ought to spend all of our meetings talking about nothing but drinking whiskey and puking? War stories? Does it mean that we ought to never talk about feelings? Does it mean that we ought never to push beyond just that thing of don't take a drink today and you won't get drunk? I don't think it means that at all. I don't think it means that at all. You know, let me suggest, just to think about it. I'd like to get you to consider with me just a little bit of what is it that we're talking about when we talk about keeping it simple. What is it that's fundamental to this thing according to one guy who's experienced the miracle of recovery? And I just want to share a few ideas that occur to me when I think about what is it that I need to do to keep it simple and keep it effective and keep it working for other alcoholics. And it has nothing to do with range wars with anybody. It's an inside job. And when we got trouble, it's an inside job. And the solution is an inside job. When I think about keeping it simple, I think about things that I need to have absolutely committed in my life. One is the fact that alcoholism is an illness. It's an illness. Now that sounds like old hat, but that's not necessarily old hat. I need to understand that alcoholism is an illness. More importantly, I need to understand that I've got it. I need to understand that that is a fatal killer disease that I have. It's not a social scar. It's not a product of trouble and confusion and all that stuff. It is a fatal disease. I need to understand that. I need to understand the nature of that illness is such that if I take one drink of anything with alcohol in it, I die spiritually. If I take one drink, I die spiritually. I no longer live in the spirit that I live. I may not die physically, although I suspect I probably would pretty quick. But I die spiritually. And I need to understand that. It's not just a matter that a drink would ruin my recovery. It's a fact that a drink would end my life as I know it. And I would die spiritually. I need to understand that. I need to understand what the nature of this disease is. I need to understand that it's a permanent condition and only some of us have it. And I'm one of them. I need to understand, and I really like the way it's put in our book, where it describes that so many words it says, I need to learn that I am not like other people, nor will I ever be. That's not who I am. I am somebody markedly different in the sense that I have a fatal illness, and I need to understand that. I need to know that at a cellular level. It's not just an adaptation of some new information. I need to get to the point where I fully understand that the issue for me is that I simply cannot drink. I can't drink. You know, some people around the program, and I was one for a long, long time, talk about one of the benefits of Alcoholics Anonymous is that we're given a choice. I would submit to you that that's simply not the case. Not in this alcoholic's judgment, nor in the language of the book. We now have the issue of choice simply doesn't exist. You know, it's a strange thing. A choice is kind of an intellectual sorting out process. I'm kind of intrigued by that whole notion of what choice means to folks like us. Yeah, it means that I've examined some options and I've chosen one. That simply has no relevance in what my experience has been. Now, let me tell you, just to think about this just a tad, and I want to dwell on this because I think it's fundamental. This whole business of understanding the nature of this illness. It's important enough that one-fourth of our basic text is filled with exactly what I'm talking about. One-fourth of the basic text. When I think about that, I'm reminded of something. You know, one of the things that has emerged in the last few years connected with our process and much else in this world is a thing called denial. Denial. There's rarely a one of those goofy programs that my daughter watches that comes on television where these weirdos get up there and tell stuff. Rarely one of those doesn't come up with denial as being the heart of the problem. You find it everywhere. Let me tell you one place you will not find it. Look in the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. You will not find the word denial. And I don't think that's just a matter that the language has changed. I think it's a fundamental message. Because what is central to this business of understanding my condition is the fact that it's not denial. Denial is a debate of things. You know, where I consider things and I reject, you know, I deny. Our condition is not described that way, nor does it behave that way. What we deal with is delusion. Delusion. Our book describes it as an inability to differentiate the true from the false. I never once saw my behavior until I was in recovery. I never once understood that strange ritual that I did with the first drink until I was in recovery. I simply couldn't see it. That's delusion. And for that reason, I don't think about issues like choice. Because the fact of the business is that drinking is simply not an option for me. I can't drink. No fight. Surrender is what it's about. Very fundamental to this whole business, I believe. Because until that happens, nothing else happens. Nothing else happens in this program until that happens. In terms of sustained recovery. I believe it's critically important. I believe it's critically important that I understand there's a solution to this thing. I've described a little bit about what gave me the sure knowledge that there was a solution, and that was other alcoholics walking into my life and saying, "Here, guy, let me tell you about me. Take my hand and come along." There is nothing more important for one alcoholic to tell another alcoholic than the truth about himself, about the experience. Nothing so quickly earns the trust and confidence as one alcoholic. That's what we have to offer each other. My job here tonight is not to be cute and witty and urbane. My job is to share with you the miracle of what happened to help a hopeless alcoholic go better than 37 years without a drink. That's my job. That's my job. Believe me, and I know you will. Because the beautiful thing of this is that we don't have to tell each other much. All we got to do is open up a little bit and you watch it happen. Watch it happen. Very, very important. I think that's critically important. The other thing I think in knowing that there's a solution that I've come to believe is I've got to know without any question that there's a power greater than myself.